This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes here on Joy 94.9. My name is Daniel and I'm joined in the studio again by Alan. We're joined by James, who's a film critic who's contributed to Outtakes before. And we're very lucky to have Michelle in the studio. Michelle, of course, heads up Transpositions, another favourite show here on Joy 94.9. Welcome, everyone.
Hello. Thanks, Daniel.
Thank you for having me.
Now, we should as well say hello to a very sweet little girl who's so well-behaved just outside the studio. Michelle, you've brought along your daughter.
One of my little ducklings came along with me tonight, and Peyton's just sitting out there just being such a good little girl tonight. I'm like, oh, thank you.
She's so sweet and so well-behaved.
Yeah, she's adorable.
Look, we didn't come to talk about Peyton as adorable as she is. What we're actually going to talk about to begin is a fantastic film which was released just a few days ago. Joy, in fact, had a fundraiser screening before the release date.
Last Monday,
that's right.
Sadly, we couldn't go.
But the film is, of course, A Danish Girl. I want to hear what everybody thought.
Being the room trans woman, I will wait till last. I want to hear what the rest of you had to think, actually.
Well, my opinion of The Danish Girl was that I loved it. I thought it was a fantastic film. I really enjoyed it. I felt totally connected to the characters, and I was there along with the story. My general gut reaction was one of total connection with the characters. But for me, there was one particular area that was disturbing a little bit, and that was Ina's or Lily's connection with clothes. I kind of felt at times that this whole clothes, her focus on clothes was almost bordering on a fetish, and it was quite it seemed to be almost a sexual thing for the character, and for me that just didn't ring true. I'd like to know what you think about that, but for me it did not resonate.
I suppose we really should say, for people who haven't seen the film, exactly what this film is about. It's based on a novel, I believe it's by David Urbashoff, that loosely constructs the life of Ina Werner, a famous Danish painter, and his wife Gerda. And now it's about Ina's transition to become Lily as one of the first recipients of sex reassignment surgery. But the film is equally about how Gerda deals with that transition. Mm-hmm. And in fact, what I noticed, and perhaps I was wrong, but I think the only one actually referred to as a Danish girl in the film, interestingly enough, is Gerda.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah, which mm-hmm. I found really interesting, because
so
here we think we're watching a story about Lily, and yet it's named after Lily's wife.
I'd agree with you. I think it's equally a story about them both.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm going to have to be the one who provides a dissenting opinion on this
film.
Obviously. For me, this is one of those situations where I need to separate how I feel about the actors' performances as opposed to the rest of the film that surrounds what they're doing, essentially.
Did you not think Eddie Redmayne was that performance?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the thing. I absolutely loved Eddie Redmayne. I loved Alicia Vikander. Both of them gave fantastic performances.
Yeah.
And I mean, as you pointed out before, the real heart of the film is the relationship between these two people, you know, navigating this, you know, at the time, would have been quite an extraordinary journey for, you know, a married couple to go on, essentially. So, I mean, the film's directed by Tom Hooper.
Tom Hooper, of course, directed
King's Speech, Les Miserables.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've always had a bit of an issue with him. He's very aggressively polite and middle brow is the best way I can put it. And I guess, I don't know, I almost felt it was the safest way to tell the story.
I wonder if a film like this needs to be safe, though.
Well,
certainly if it's trying to attract a mass audience.
I'm curious what you mean by safe.
Overly matte. This definitely falls in the prestige sort of picture subgenre, and you know, unsurprisingly, it has been nominated for a whole raft of awards.
But not best film, which not is best interesting film. As
Very
well.
Interesting, yeah. But I'm quite happy that both the main actors did pick up nominations. I mean, I guess it's just more that it's very fussy over set design and the way things look. And
is that a problem?
It's a problem in and of itself. I think it's more just that other aspects tend to get overlooked.
If I can. Isn't that an interesting parallel between Lily then, who is really concerned with how she looks and how people see her? I mean, I know that's not what they intended, but
yeah.
What do you think, Michelle?
The biggest complaint I hear from the trans community is that the role should have been played by a trans woman.
Yes.
I completely disagree.
Okay, that's
you
interesting.
You could not play this role as a trans woman.
Why?
Because it required Ina to be a man to begin with.
Yeah.
Look, I'm 2 years in. I haven't had surgeries or whatever. Yes, I've grown breasts and stuff. But to play that role, like the scenery standing in front of the mirror and whatever, you need to be basically, you're talking about 1920s?
Yeah.
There's no surgeries. There's no anything going on at that time. There's, you know, this had to be a man transitioning into a woman. You could not get almost any trans woman to go and detransition for a movie. Like, you're not talking like Charlize Theron, who's going to go and shave her head and lose so many kilos or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. You're talking presenting as a man for a good portion of the film and transitioning into a woman, but you're also talking, there are no hormones, there's no breast augmentation, there's no way. I would be offended if they actually put a trans woman in there.
How do you think Eddie Redmayne did evoking some of those themes?
I think he did amazing. And see, the thing is the things like the focus on the clothes and whatever, a lot of trans women have certain things they focus on to begin with. Mm-hmm. Myself, it was makeup.
Yeah.
Like I had a big fascination with makeup to begin with, and that's where my sort of stuff transitioned. And I've talked to a lot of different trans women who have, you know, had fascinations with shoes or pantyhose or whatever. Mm-hmm. And there does have that cross between cross-dresser and trans. There are sometimes that those lines actually blur.
Blur.
Mm-hmm. And you have to, you know, and even at that time, there may have been, you know, a harder way to determine between trans and cross-dresser at that time.
Right.
So I really think if you don't understand, it would come across that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Eddie really did do his homework, and just the way he portrayed it, it showed a bit of the dysphoria. Like, mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I really need to go and put on those clothes. I really need to put those clothes on because that makes me feel like Lily again, and I need to be Lily.
And yes. You know what? It was aching. It was confronting. It was in certain places, it was hard to watch. And that was because you really got a sense of the struggle.
And that's exactly it. That is exactly what the dysphoria is. I really need to get and put those clothes on because I need to be that person. That's how I need to be.
But at the same time, I really can't do it because for a number of reasons. But
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that struggle, that's what for me made this film. You know, a film very rarely surpasses my expectations, especially when they're high, and this film did.
And you can see the love between the two characters as well. And you know, as husband and wife, and even though they're in that struggle, they're still there for each, or she's still there for him. But the thing that struggled with me the most was, and I've seen it in the community as well, is once somebody wants to go through transition, they're in such a hurry to transition that they sort of forget about things behind them.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of message I try to preach is slow down and let people transition with you. Mm-hmm. Where Lily was pretty stereotypical of, I need to do this, I need to do this now, and I'm no longer your husband, and your husband's dead. And I've seen that story told 100 times.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
We are, of course, talking The Danish Girl here on Outtakes on Joy 94.9. And in fact, we've been talking about the relationship between Gerda, played by Alicia Vikander, and Eddie Redmayne's character, Lily. And I think this clip really captures the kind of struggle. And what you were saying, Michelle, about the rush mm-hmm. to transition and how sometimes things get left behind.
Mm. When I read the script of The Danish Girl, in it you saw violence against a trans woman, you saw discrimination, you saw her struggling to find doctors and healthcare. And what I found astounding is that 70 or 80 years on, whilst there has been some progression, there is still so far to go. You know, the violence against trans women, particularly trans women of colour in the United States, but all over the world, healthcare problems, the fact that you can be fired in 32 states in America for being trans, it's astounding to me that despite this story, it's taken so long. And I think what's amazing, in the past year, the discussion has become mainstream, and it's about cisgender people educating themselves and learning to be allies to the trans community. And that's the great education that I've had in this film, because I was incredibly ignorant when I was doing Les Miserables and I was sent this script. It's about educating yourself, really.
Well, we were going to go to a clip from The Danish Girl, but instead we decided to listen to Eddie Redmayne talking about why... I think what he's really speaking about there is why trans representation is so important and why a film like The Danish Girl is so important. And really, Michelle, I'd like to hear your thoughts on why trans representation is so important and why a film like The Danish Girl is so important.
Well, when you look back at... And this is something we talked about before coming on air, was if you look back on a lot of films that have come out over the years... Whenever you talk about someone who was trans, you always talk about, well, I met this woman and she ended up being a man. And so it was always a joke or a punchline. Mm-hmm. So starting to see films like this, to start giving a bit of a history and understanding of who trans women are and what we really are about, is actually, it's overdue. Really, really overdue. I mean, you're talking films like The Naked Gun and stuff like that, where, you know, silhouette of a woman, all of a sudden, it's really inappropriate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How did that shift happen? Because it feels like there's been a shift, doesn't it?
Well, I'm going to be honest, and some people probably honestly say otherwise, but as soon as Caitlyn Jenner came out and you started getting mainstream attention.
Yeah.
Now, we were just saying, this film... This script actually came out and was put in front of Eddie from, was it Tom Hooper?
Yes.
Yeah, back in 2012. So it was before the trans explosion happened. So this didn't just come out because all of a sudden trans is mainstream. But when someone mainstream in the media, in Hollywood, whatever comes out, like Caitlyn Jenner, big, huge, wow. All of a sudden, as soon as Caitlyn came out, news articles, everybody else, all this attention started coming out.
What do you think of Caitlyn Jenner?
What she's done is coming out has helped out heaps.
Yeah.
All right. She has not exactly been the best representation. Mm. She does get her foot in her mouth, but she's done a hell of a lot, to be honest. And we do have to owe it to her for that. Again, I don't agree with things she does. She, you know, still voting for Republican, which is totally against anything LGBT. She's, you know, she's talking about things like women, the hardest thing now these days is figuring out what to wear and my nails and whatever, and it pisses off a lot of feminists and true feminists of why are you trying to cater to the stereotype of what women don't want.
Well, I think if we put it glibly, perhaps she's flawed. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Exactly.
And I mean, as you say, I mean, who knows what can happen from here? There obviously will be others.
Of course.
Yeah, come into the limelight and, you know, we'll hopefully pick up where, you know, from where they've left off eventually.
So we are, of course, talking about trans representation in film this evening. And for me, one of the films that really deals with this topic in a really interesting way is Hedwig and the Angry Inch, which I know, Michelle, you haven't seen. In fact, you had some interesting thoughts about it, but I know James and Alan and myself, we all really like this film, don't we?
Look, I looked at Hedwig and just understanding that it was trans-related and just the images in the trailer I saw, I'm like, I don't know if I want anything to do with this. I'm willing to sit down and actually watch it. I'm very open-minded.
Yeah. I'd be interested to hear what you actually think because the film, I mean, it's about Hedwig, who was Hans and goes through sex reassignment surgery to please a man, but it goes terribly wrong and Hedwig is left with an angry inch, hence the title. And it's about her life as a failed musician after that. And some of the lines in the film are just classic, but the music as well is so interesting. You know, this film really...
It's very evocative, the music.
Yeah, well, I mean, the film, it plays with these ideas about the essentialism of gender, about the essentialism of identity, about the way that we talk about gender, and the way that there's really no way to describe Hedwig in this film, because she's not a man, she's not a woman. She calls herself, actually in the film, a slip of a girly boy. And it's that idea that you can kind of move between gender. It doesn't really represent any way of being, but it plays with the ideas, and that's what I find so engaging.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's significant that obviously the main character as well, you know, is a musician or an artist as well.
That level of theatricality.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's right. And obviously, you know, there was that space to sort of, you know, navigate those kind of spectrums.
Well, that's why there's a song in the film called Wig in a Box. And Hedwig starts singing the song about, you know, how she does drag to, you know, she's feeling bad and she says whenever she does drag, she feels good. But then all of a sudden, you know, she's in her trailer. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, the trailer opens up into this massive stage and words come up on the screen, almost inviting you to sing along.
Karaoke.
Well, it just makes plain the theatricality of gender.
Didn't Neil Patrick Harris play this role or something
on
recently?
Broadway? Yeah,
yes.
Oh, so it's come back to it. It started as an off Broadway production, then it was turned into a film, then went back off Broadway, and then it just recently came onto Broadway again.
So, from your point of view, if you actually were to watch this, do you think this is a film that a trans woman should have played, or do you think it's a role that a man should have played, like a cisgendered man?
That's what do you think, James?
No, it's true. This is the constant question.
You know what I think it was written by John Cameron Mitchell, who happens to be a man.
Yeah.
And I don't...
Start in the film, start in the original production. So, I mean, I guess you can look at it from that perspective, but I guess...
I don't think it represents the trans community at all, to be honest. I don't think it does. I think it discusses the idea of gender and sexuality, but I don't think it represents...
Well,
So
obviously...
Just to answer that question,
trans character.
Should a trans woman have played? I don't think so.
Because it's even like, you know, because now they're redoing Rocky. Rocky Horror.
Oh, the Rocky Horror. Yeah.
And now they're putting Laverne Cox in the role of Dr. Frankenfurter. And people are getting angry because they're putting her in the role, but they're saying that Frankenfurter is actually a crossdresser, transvestite, not a transsexual. And so I think they're trying to change the role or whatever, but people are getting upset because they're putting a trans woman in that role.
We might leave it as an open-ended question.
I would say so. I'm very curious to see what people think on that, if people have seen Hedwig and what they think on that. Because, you know, this has been brought up as a trans-related... Because it has been pitched to me as a
trans-related
movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Well, here's a song from Hedwig and the Angry Inch. This is one of my favorite songs from the soundtrack. It's a musical. This song is called The Origin of Love, and it's really about gender and the way gender is formed and structured and reiterated in our culture. So The Origin of Love from Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Earth was still flat, and clouds made of fire, and mountains stretched up to the sky, sometimes higher. Folks roamed the earth like big rolling kegs. They had two sets of arms, they had two sets of legs, they had two faces peering out of one giant head, so they could watch all around them as they talked while they read, and they never knew nothing of life. It was before the war, the origin of life. There was three sexes then, one that looked like two men glued up back to back. They called the children of the sun, and similar in shape and girth was the children of the earth. They looked like two girls rolled up in one, and the children of the moon was like a fork stuck on a spoon. They was part sun, part earth, part door, part sun. And the gods grew quite scared of our strength and defiance, and Thor said, I'm gonna kill them all with my hammer, like I killed the giants. But Zeus said, no, you better let me use my lightning like scissors, like I cut the legs off the whales, dinosaurs into lizards. And then he grabbed up some bolts, he let out a laugh, said I'll split them right down the middle, gonna cut them right up in half. In the storm clouds gathered above, into great balls of fire. And then fire shot down from the sky in bolts, like shining blades of a knife. Can you rip right through the flesh of the children of first time I saw you, we just split in two. You was looking at me, I was looking at you. You had a way so familiar, I could not recognize, 'cause you had blood on your face, I had blood in my eyes. But I could swear by your expression that the pain down in your soul was the same, the one down in my.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes here on Joy 94.9, and we are, of course, talking about trans representation. And we've actually got on the line, we've got Sally Goldner, who is the director of Transgender Victoria. Sally, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
No problems. Good to be with you.
Well, it's good to have you with us. Now, Sally, I think to begin, perhaps tell us a little bit about Transgender Victoria. What is it, and what is the purpose of an organisation like Transgender Victoria?
So, yeah, we've existed since 1999 as supposed to provide, to use mission statement language, justice, equity and better healthcare service provision and service provision for trans and gender diverse people. And I suppose there's three main ways in which we do that. Through advocacy, by getting laws changed and ensuring policy makers at state and federal level include trans and gender diverse perspectives, through education and training, and through what we're doing now, awareness, by talking about things in the media. I suppose there are three main areas, and particularly those that are relevant for our conversation. Yeah,
it's interesting that you talk about education and raising awareness, because we actually played a clip from with Eddie Redmayne, of course, who's been in The Danish Girl, and he was saying exactly that, that a film like The Danish Girl is important because it educates and because it raises awareness. I'd like to know why you think representation is so important.
I think that, we have had, sadly, a long history of inaccurate representation and or invisibility. And whilst we've seen, I think I've used the analogy, we're turning a corner in the last 3 years. I often say that, use a semi-trailer analogy, we're half onto the better road, but some of it's still on the old road that we don't want to be on anymore. Mm-hmm. It is really important. And I think we're certainly now, whilst obviously lots of people have been working for a long time, we now seem to have a reasonable foundation on board, but I think what's happening now is we need a diverse range of stories that look at things, certainly in the past, to give an idea of what's been experienced and give that in, let's say, a realistic but respectful way. And I think that in the past, a lot of media representation on film and television hasn't. And what I call, I break the media representation into two, what I call news media and then what I call arts media, for lack of a better approach, which includes film, television, stage, everything else. And I think we have seen a shift in both in the last few years, and that's really necessary
What do you think are some of the films that do get the story out there, that do it right?
I think that over time, the good ones have been Boys Don't Cry, which I know is a tough film for many trans and gender diverse people to watch, but it does
Why is it tough for trans people to watch?
It does involve transphobic violence and abuse in the end, when the character Brandon Tina, played by Hilary Swank, is the protagonist, to realise that Brandon is a trans man. And this is a critical factor, because trans and gender diverse people are often, obviously from our point of view, inaccurately portrayed as deceivers. And so a film like this says what happens when that is found out. It does lead to violence, and that's why it's important to use correct language, for example, when referring to trans people, and not say that we're not who we are, which I think can only portray that inaccurate stereotype. Mm-hmm. But that's one. I think another good representation for trans women, this time for trans women, I thought the Carlotta documentary, which is coming up for 18 months ago now, or whether you call it a docudrama, I suppose, I'm not quite up, there is an exact term which I've forgotten, I think portrayed things really well. So I think it's good to have those stories out there and get some truth out there.
You were talking about violence, your portrayals of violence. Is that important for people who aren't trans to see?
It is unfortunately necessary. Naturally, I wish they didn't. And I think we do need to get those stories out there. But so people can understand that there is still some countries of the world outright transphobic murders. That we seem to be, fingers crossed, and with all respect, not having seemed to having the murders, but there is still high levels of physical assault and a verbal assault, which do all add up. Whilst they're not murders, they damage mental health, etc. So it's important to get the truth out there,
you know,
about some of the betrayals.
The media does tend, you know, Hollywood film does tend to really portray very rigid ideas about masculinity and femininity. Do you think that contributes to some of the appalling violence against trans people?
I look at the media, Hollywood, but, you know, a lot of society is still very much on what I call a Tarzan and Jane mentality to what we would call body identity and expression. And, you know, I can't work that out. I mean, whilst it is good, and I acknowledge there's lots of specifics about the debates, say, read The Danish Girl, when are we going to have, say, two things have come to mind, a film where the lead hero or someone is, let's say, non-binary identity would be really cool, or for that matter, just someone who is, we'll say, a trans or gender-diverse superhero, a super pan, if you like, would be, I think, a really good thing. It's good that we're having these sort of, as I say, docudrama type of things. Transparent quite is good on television.
Have you seen The Danish Girl, Sally?
I haven't. Which I'm sorry I can't comment on at the moment, but there's a range of reasons, not political, let's say,
yes,
for doing that.
How do you feel about the fact that Eddie Redmayne, rather than a transgender person, has been cast in the lead?
I think that thinking about this, I think it goes a step further. People saying, well, surely they could have got a trans woman to play the part, and I think that's quite possible. And I think part of the problem, like anything where the people in power are not understanding of the issues, there isn't that sense of the need of understanding of trans issues. It's sort of a parallel to women in the workforce where men are in power and don't see the problem in itself. So maybe the casting directors or the producers didn't quite see it. And that doesn't excuse it, of course, but it's about getting trans and gender diverse people and allies into, you know, well, every facet of life to make sure our voice is heard.
I guess we'll need to touch base with you after you've seen the film, because I'd love to know if you still feel that way after you see the way that Eddie Redmayne does the part and the way that the film does deal with those issues. So we might have to touch base again. And on that note, if people do want to touch base with Transgender Victoria, how can people find out more about it, get in touch with you or with the organisation?
The best way is via our website, transgendervictoria.com, where they can find out all the things that we do and use our contact form or landline to get in touch with us for any information.
Fantastic. Well, look, thank you so much for joining us this evening, Sally. I know it's been so wonderful having you on the program, and the website is great, Transgender Victoria. I really encourage people to go on and have a look and see what the website has to say. You are on Outtakes here on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You are on Outtakes here on Joy 94.9, and tonight we're really looking at films that deal with trans issues, that represent trans people. Michelle, what did you think? We, you know, we've been talking a lot tonight about Eddie Redmayne playing Lily in The Danish Girl. Sally, who we just spoke to from Transgender Victoria, was a bit iffy on the subject. What do you think?
Look, I still believe that role could not be played by a trans woman. again, a trans woman, have had to have detransitioned basically for the role. Through most of the film, I wouldn't probably say 75% now, I'd say more than 50% of the film, the character was portrayed as a man with his wife. There was a large portion there where she was going through a transition and trying to discover herself. But then as she finally was presenting as Lily, she then was presented as a woman. Yeah. But the thing is then these people saying they're boycotting it, they're not following it, they're not going to do it because the person who was hired was not trans woman to play the role. But let me really break it down for you. Mm-hmm. I know, according to the casting, that there are very many trans men and trans women who were playing roles. The nurse that looked after Lily was a trans woman.
Yes.
There were actors like Jake Graff, who's a trans man, was out in things like the Bannister and stuff. So they're playing many different roles within the film. There were trans women and trans people consulted for the role. There were different trans people involved in helping make it. So they're saying that this has no trans representation. There's no trans people involved. When the film debuted back in the U.S., back in November and that, when it was going to the White House, whatever, there was a large number of trans people brought in who were actually part of the film.
Do you know, for me, it comes down to the basic question of filmmaking and acting.
So I was going to say, like, it's, you know, obviously, all those things you mentioned are incredibly important, but we're not even, sometimes I feel like some of these discussions, we're not even discussing the, you know, the quality of the representation or the performance itself.
Exactly.
And of course, I mean, all four of us in here in agreement that Eddie Redmayne really does tap into, you know, the struggle and, you know, what the character goes through.
I want to kind of bring things back a little bit quickly because we are talking about trans representation in film. And one of the very first films, what's widely regarded as the first film to portray trans represent a trans character and trans themes was, of course, a film called Glenn or Glenda by Ed Wood. Now, this has been widely panned as one of the worst films of all time.
Like one of the worst filmmakers of all time.
Well, what's the name of the award? He got the Golden Turkey Award for the worst director of all time. look, I'm going to play the trailer. This is just so, you know, I think for a bit of light and shade, a bit of contrast, so that we can see perhaps how far we really have come with a film like The Danish Girl.
A woman born at the age of 24.
The new life is begun.
The body of the woman within begins to appear now. The world is shocked by a person who changes his sex. Thus, a strange case of Glenn, who is Glenda, one and the same person. He dares to enter the street dressed in the clothes he so much desires to wear.
Say, did you read about the guy that had his sex changed to a girl? Says he was perfectly normal, too.
How can a guy be normal and go and do a thing like that to himself?
What about their children, Doctor? Would their children become the same way their father is?
Do you realize what would happen if every man in the country that wanted to wear women's clothes or felt like the women went to their doctors and wanted a sex change?
Glenn and all the hundreds of thousands of other Glens across the nation face quite a problem.
You know, it's really quite shocking, isn't it?
Oh, my God.
Now, this was only about 60 years ago. This was 1953 that this film was made. It's, you know, we've all been, like, cringing and laughing and not knowing where to look.
See it from my perspective.
Well, what is your perspective, Michelle?
Oh, it's funny. Like, that's the first thing people ask me is about the children when I came out and transitioned. And everyone's like, oh, but you're 6'3" American. You're this, you know, you want to be a woman? Like, I hear that and I just go, wow, I feel dirty.
We should note that Ed Wood was widely regarded for his horror films and science fiction films. And then he, you know, this in the midst of that kind of catalogue says a lot about the way that trans people were represented then as a kind of oddity.
Yeah, but he and a lot of other actors and directors and stuff at that time were closet cross-dressers. I think he was actually a public cross-dresser, wasn't he?
Yes.
I'm not sure if he was public, but it was well known.
You know, I want to contrast it with a clip from Transparent, and, you know, we don't have a lot of time to talk about why Transparent is important, but the way that it kind of deals with the issues has so changed. Transparent is, of course, an Amazon Studios production featuring Jeffrey Tambor in the lead role as a older man who transitions to become Moira and his family and how they cope with it. So this is a scene from Transparent where he goes into a bathroom with his daughters.
I don't really have to go that bad.
So. I do.
All right. Dad, if you have to go in front of me, that's fine. Because I don't have to go.
No, Ellie has to go.
She doesn't, Dad.
Is that a man?
Hey, Mom.
What?
Do you see the person over there with the gray hair?
Mm-hmm. I think it's a guy. She just called him down.
Excuse me. Are you a man?
This is the ladies' restroom.
Yeah, we're aware of what it is. Thank you.
Sir,
thank you. We're good.
Sir, can you hear me? Because this is the ladies' restroom, and clearly that is a man.
This is my father, and he's a woman, and he has every right to be in this bathroom.
No, he does not. And you know what? I'm calling security because there are young women in here that you are traumatizing.
Oh, really? Oh, you mean the little snickering bitches over there? They look really traumatized.
You don't talk to my children that way.
Oh,
and you don't even talk to my father like that. Your father is a pervert.
You are a fucking cunt.
Right, let's go.
Allie, yes, you all need to go.
Dad, don't you need to go pee?
No, I don't. I'm fine.
You need to go.
Let's just go.
Have a nice day.
The sad thing you have to understand is that's actually a reality in the States. That's not actually, like, exaggerated.
Yeah, for dramatic effect, yeah, I'm not surprised.
Here, no problem. I go with my girls to the toilet, we do whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, I present fairly well, but, you know, I have to tell my girls not to say daddy in the toilet, but that is a reality.
But I think the woman in question wasn't able to tell whether or not Moira was male or female. She asked the question, are you a man or a woman, because she heard the name father. So I think that's what triggered it all, was just father.
But I think that's the point, because it's really trying to break down the way we talk about gender and the way people look as well. And that's been an issue a lot for male to female transitioners.
Oh, yeah.
That the idea that you have to look a kind of way to be a successful trans person.
But think about, you know, the idea of gender. My daughters still say daddy, but she and her. And friends of mine and stuff have actually tried to correct me and say, stop having them call you daddy. It's dangerous for you. It's dangerous for the public. It's dangerous for them. I'm going, but who says they shouldn't say daddy anymore?
I agree.
And coming back to a film like Hedwig and the Angry Inch, what Hedwig so successfully does is undo the language, the structure of the language that we use to talk about gender. And that's what a scene like this from Transparent really highlights.
One of the great things about Transparent is it does actually bring in and introduce a lot of trans actors and actresses throughout the entire show. Mm-hmm. You do need to have somebody who is cisgender to play the role, because there's a lot of flashbacks that go back to
his
family and him being younger, as a man presenting and things he's gone through.
For people listening who don't know, what is a cisgender person?
So somebody who's cisgendered, and people get confused feeling they're being labeled, but it's a way to determine between someone who's transgender and cisgender. Cisgendered means you identify as the gender that you're born with. Mm-hmm. So you're born as a male, you identify as a male, and you don't feel the need to be anything else. Mm-hmm. I was born as a male, but I identified in my mind and in my body as a woman. Mm-hmm. And so I'm transgender. Yes. So that's really the only difference.
Mm-hmm. We are talking about trans representation here on Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
You are on Outtakes here on Joy 94.9. We're talking about trans representation tonight. We've been talking about Transparent, which I think has done so much to represent trans people and the kind of challenges that a lot of trans people face. And it's critically acclaimed. It's won a number of awards. Jill Soloway was the creator, writer, and director of this series. And this is what she had to say when she was thanking people in her speech after winning the Emmy.
My family, Felix, Isaac, and Bruce, who puts the music in the show, and the music and everything. My other family, my sister Faith, my mom Elaine, and my Mappa Carrie. Thank you, Mappa, for coming out and coming to LA and coming here tonight. And something interesting about my Mappa Carrie, she could tomorrow go and try to find an apartment, and in 32 states it would be legal for the landlord to look her in the eye and say, we don't rent to trans people. We don't have a trans tipping point yet. We have a trans civil rights problem. So go to transequality.org and vote to pass the trans equality bill. Thank you.
Jill Soloway taking out an Emmy for Transparent. And you really do get that sense that these shows do, these films, these TV series, they aim to educate.
They do. Yeah. It's a great show. It's funny. People lost their shit over the Danish Girl not having a trans main actor playing the role, but then with this role,
they would give this one a pass,
which totally surprised me.
It's funny because so much is happening in that space, though, isn't it?
There is. We are very lucky here in Australia to have the rights and the abilities to do the things that we can do here compared to the States. The States, you know, you can be fired for your job, everything like that, for just being trans or gay or whatever. Here, not an issue.
Yeah.
But there are new stories that are coming out that, you know, every so many months or every year that the stories are getting better and represent more. So I just got done watching the web series Her Story, and Her Story was by trans people for trans people. It's a great little series. Look it up, Her Story on YouTube. I can't rave it enough. It actually gives a really good, it's short, it's brief, it's more like a pilot series. Mm-hmm. Because of like money and whatever, but definitely you can see the direction where trans representation is going.
Does it, Her Story actually communicate and talk to the non-trans community? What would I get from it?
Well, you can see that you have, this lesbian who is part of a gay magazine. She is wanting to go and talk to a trans woman, ask her some questions about dating and whatever. And you can see them actually having a bit of a connection moving forward. It's basically seeing someone trans in their daily life. Mm-hmm. And how they would, say, interact or sort of date or whatever. And it's real. It's not like
contrived.
Yeah, it's really good.
You know, we've only really been able to just superficially scrape the surface this evening. There are so many interesting, complex portrayals of transgender people. I'm thinking about some of Pedro Almodovar's films, In Her Skin, All About My Mother, about trans America. Interestingly enough, you were saying that you thought, Michelle, in trans America, that could have benefited from a trans actor.
Definitely could have benefited from a trans actor.
Yeah. Why do you think we're having this conversation about trans people playing trans people when we have, we've had it, but not to the same extent about gay people playing gay people and, you know...
I guess because it's visual.
It is
that
visual.
What it really comes down to.
Yeah,
it
is. And why should you have to dress like Jared Leto, Dallas Buyers Club? Why would you have to go and dress, you know, as a woman, represent a trans woman or a woman, mm-hmm. when I could easily play that role?
Do that role, yeah.
Exactly. You know, I can alter myself so I'm still a woman playing a trans woman in that role. You know, I don't have to alter myself like playing the Danish girl. You know, it's a good role that I could have played. Or even Trans America. So, but look, and, you know, these, and just coming in here, you know, this is just exploring this idea. And these are things that we explore on our show. It's more around trans stuff, daily trans things, trans shows, trans music. And if anybody's interested in learning more, you know, tune in to us tomorrow, Tuesday nights
when
at 8
is
p.m.
the show? So,
yeah, Tuesday night, 8 p.m., yeah. Transpositions.
Just trying to give you a plug, Michelle.
Definitely. And if you do have any questions, you can get us on Facebook, which is Transpositions on Joy. And
or you can contact us at Joyful Outtakes on Facebook.
And any questions.
So it's now time for the Sound Museum. That's it for Outtakes this week. Thank you, Alan, James, and Michelle.
Thank you.
It's Michael Kirby here, and I am introducing Joy 94.9, the best radio station in Victoria.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.